Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
That's how you do it in Thailand. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. And in Burmese, you go, Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Just go over the border. Just like that, it all changes. Such is life. So, what can you tell me about loving kindness? What do you remember? Nothing?
The motive.
It's
the kindness that threads every, when your mental, your thoughts, the kindness that strings through, keeps the continuum.
The mental continuum that maintains the different mind states in a way that is not habituated. But it's choice. Is that right? How often do you get caught up by a habit of fear or anger? More than once a day, maybe?
More than once a day.
Resentment, failure, right? All those things that you've done before. We've all done that, haven't we? And when you actually decide that you don't want to do that, because you know that you don't feel better when you do it. Isn't that true? That you create your own suffering when you do that, don't you? So then you can start saying, okay, I would like to be more kind. And you just make that an aspiration day after day for a period of time. And at night you try to remember the times you were kind. And you congratulate yourself. It was once, you remember it 20 times. You congratulate yourself on it. So that you're not picking on yourself, which is hatred. You're practicing being kind to yourself by seeing that you were capable of kindness. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Once you get good at that, how many of you criticize yourselves? Oh, we have a show of hands on that. Well, I'll be darned. Okay, we're all in the same closet. How many of you find it's really worthwhile to criticize yourself? Does that stop you from doing it?
No.
Why?
Because the habit just runs when you're not. When you're not watching what you're thinking, you're not aware of what you're thinking.
Right.
No, I think I actually believe that there's a way through it. I think that if I just do it enough or something, that there's some door to go through. There's some, if you just natter enough.
Do you know anybody who has ever done everything perfectly?
I don't.
Have you ever heard of anybody?
No.
Are you planning to be the only person in the history of this whole planet that has accomplished that goal?
No.
Then what's wrong with this picture? When you do something wrong and you actually watch it and you see how you would like to do it different next time, not criticize yourself, but see, oh, I see. Oh, I was holding the needle upside down and had my thumb over the eye. That's why I couldn't thread it. Oh, now I can turn the needle around.
Yeah.
When you accept what you're not doing, can you learn from it?
Yes.
When you don't accept what you're not doing, can you learn from it?
No.
Is criticizing accepting what you're doing or not accepting it?
It's totally closed. No learning.
Exactly. So to actually name that, name, oh, this is not going to help me
right.
do what I want, is one way to break the habit, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you catch it. If I don't make mistakes, I'll never learn anything. Fuck off, resident expert. Okay, you wouldn't say that because you're polite and neat. I understand that. But you know what I'm saying.
I don't want my resident expert to feel bad.
Why not? They make you feel bad. Maybe they should know what it feels like.
I don't want anybody to feel bad.
But you do. You want yourself to feel bad if you criticize yourself and don't stop.
Yeah.
You know, there's something about that, that it makes a familiarity or something. Mm-hmm. Does it? Mm-hmm. Something about being critical?
It's also about striving. But even when, like we were talking about just learning right now, there's like this, you want to change things, not just accept the way they are. Like even if you want to use this moment to learn, it's still, I would get trapped at the striving.
So
it's very—it's tricky.
Yeah, it is tricky. You're absolutely right. It's tricky. So, can you give me an example?
Well, with the needle,
mm-hmm.
right? So, it would be so easy to say, "Oh, okay." So you accept that moment. You don't criticize, but then you're still aspiring to be a better sewer. That could come in or creep in. Do you know, like it's you want to change or strive.
If you say, oh, I'm holding the needle the wrong way up, and then you turn it around, say, oh, good, now I know how to hold it.
Right. And then, but the second layer of that, oh, I'm learning how to do it better, I guess.
But you just learned it. You don't even have
right.
to say it. And you, but you don't criticize yourself for holding it upside down.
Right.
You know, like the... If you're saying that people criticize themselves because they feel they're not as good as they should be, is that what you're saying?
I think that is a motivation.
I do too.
Yeah.
And I would totally agree yeah. with that. I would totally agree mm-hmm. with that, that there is this kind of expectation that has never actually been brought out into the world and given a passing mark. But no matter what you do, there's going to be something that isn't quite the way it should be, if that's what you mean by
mm-hmm.
striving. And that's what I call a resident expert. Because you notice they always have more to say after the fact than before the fact. Very curious that. Tell you everything you did wrong after the fact, but not, they don't say, by the way, turn the needle over before you put the thread up. They say, oh, look at you, you stupid person.
You shouldn't have eaten that. You shouldn't have said that. You shouldn't have done that. Instead of, instead of, don't say that.
You know, the thing about words that's very interesting in terms of what you shouldn't say, the thing about words that's very interesting is when you're really talking from your heart, the words are only a vibration that carry the energy of what you're communicating. The words don't even have to be exact. Your heart always speaks better than words. You don't have to say anything perfectly. You just have to be open in your heart, that's all. There is no way anything can be said perfectly. It doesn't exist. But, you know, that saying, words are like fingers pointing at the moon. They are not the moon.
Yeah.
Words give a direction to the flow of energy from your being. And they hold, they're like a boat that doesn't actually go in anywhere, that for, you know, it doesn't go into the town, to the city you want it, to the house you want to be to, or the city, you know, they don't actually, they carry a message. But once the message has reached the point between you and me, the energy of those words that was there in the person who uttered the words is what carries forward. You know, do you ever meet somebody who's playing one person against another Any of you ever know anybody like that? Who favors this person for a while and then they leave town and then this one and then... Any of you know people like that? Mm-hmm. So, can you feel that when you're talking to them? Mm-hmm. Huh? Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. Some of you can. I can. Mm-hmm. Can't you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. What you're feeling is their problem. You don't have to be part of their problem. Right? I mean, is that right? Is that true? Mm-hmm. But you can feel what people's motive is. Mm-hmm. Is what people's motives are. Mm-hmm. What is people's are motives? Whatever. You can feel people's motives in communication. Mm-hmm. You can feel what that is. Can't you?
Yeah.
So, it isn't the words that you pick that are important. It's that you pick on yourself for words that is the point. Mm-hmm. That's not fair. Words are like a, you know, a taxi cab or something. They're not what is the real communication.
So what you need to do is pick on what you're feeling instead of, I know.
No, you don't pick on anything because what you're feeling is just what you're feeling. And the next moment it's going to be changed. Yeah. Do you pick on something that isn't permanent? Oh, it was that flower. That flower was way more beautiful yesterday than it is today because today is a day older. No?
No.
You don't do that, do you?
I do it to myself. I don't do it to the flower, but I do it to myself.
How can you be kind to others if you're not kind to yourself? Can you? Because you're so busy thinking about whether you did the right thing, it's hard for you to even see others. So, maybe that's the most painful thing you do to yourself and to them. Maybe you don't need to do that. You know, and I know, that there is no such thing as a perfect form. Don't you know that? Okay. This is a perfect Buddha, except the expression on the eyes isn't quite right. They should be slightly open and they're basically closed. And it's a little small. And it's made out of really cheap material. I bet you. It is very beautiful for what it is. But as a whole lot of things, it isn't. Is that true?
Yes.
To be a form, there's a whole lot of other things you have to leave out. If you're going to be a ball of wax, you can't be a loaf of bread. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
In order to be a glass, you can't be a box of Kleenex. Isn't that true?
Mm. Yeah.
There's something always missing when there is a form, for that form to be what it is. There is no such thing as perfection of form. The whole, they say in the Tibetan tradition of Buddhism, that the consort of form is space, and the power of form is ignorance. Because you have to ignore a lot of things in order to be a form.
Right.
It's pretty straightforward, isn't it?
What
think that there is then?
Because there is something in you that feels if you had only done something right, you would have been loved. Mm-hmm. But there is something that you should do right so you can be loved. You should quit criticizing so that you love yourself. And then you'll be able to see how much other people do love you. Because now you can't quite relax with that. You're checking to see what you might not have done right.
Yeah.
It's sometimes very useful to find various therapy ways to work with that. You know, there's lots of different ways to work with that self-criticism. But it is not useful because it's not loving kindness. And it creates a habit that's not how you want to die, is it? Oh, I should have died on my left side instead of my right. Oh, I should have died on the out-breath instead of the right. I should have died with my left toe tucked underneath me. That's not how you want to do it, is it?
No.
Because the death state, they say, is what creates the impetus for what comes next. So wouldn't you like to die thinking how grateful I am to have had this life? And how happy I am for the things that I did well?
Yeah.
And not the list. So that's what loving kindness is about. It's way more fun to give something to someone else than it is to hoard it for yourself. You know that. You all know that, don't you? We know it when we're kids. And when we're kids and we're playing, you know, there's always some point where we see another kid and we just sort of like them and we offer them whatever we're playing with. You've seen that, haven't you, mm-hmm. on the playground? It's kind of a natural thing, altruism. It feels better. It is there underneath the criticism. But to get sidetracked by the criticism stops you from just enjoying whoever made you with all of the beauty that is there. And believe me, it's there. So, like, to make an effort, you know, 6 times a day, find something positive you did. And brag about it to yourself. Make a big sign, stick it on the fridge. I did this really fantastically today. Before you go to sleep at night, remember the 6 things you did and think, oh, how wonderful. After a week, see what feels better. One of the things that will happen is that you might find out exactly why that criticism was so important for you as a survival tool and free yourself of it, which would be useful. But nothing arises without cause. There's some reason why that was powerful for you. So to actually be able to even choose to not be caught by anger or by self-criticism or by fear. You can't do anything wrong. If you want to learn from what you're doing, you can't do anything. If you're willing to learn from what you're doing. You know that story of Buddha's heard about this guy, his name was Angulimala. You know that name, Angulimala? Mm-hmm. Which means a rosary of fingers. Angulimala's name wasn't Angulimala first in the beginning of the story. He was this young boy who but a really strong spiritual aspiration. And there was a local teacher who was really quite a good teacher. And the father decided that he should allow his son to become spiritual rather than to continue in the family business. And he went to Angulimala and said, he went to the teacher and said, will you teach my son? And the teacher said, well, yes, of course. He's a bright young boy and he's interested and I'll do that. And Angulimala was so happy, well, to Angulimala to be. And he was such a good student and everything was going fine. 2-3 years went by. And then a richer person moved into the neighborhood and he had a son that he wanted to be a spiritual being. And he liked this teacher too, but he didn't want his son to be trained with anyone else because he didn't want his son to be compared to anyone else, right? He wanted his son to be the only one. Got it? So he went to the teacher and said, I will pay you an exorbitant amount to teach my son, but you have to get rid of this other kid. And the teacher needed money, and he felt badly about it, but he decided that Angulimala had such talent that he would find a better teacher, and that, you know, but then how was he going to tell this kid that he couldn't be his teacher? He thought he would give him an assignment that was so atrocious that he would say, you can't be a good teacher, and walk away. So he said to him, I will continue to teach you now, but first you have to bring me the finger bone of the right hand of 100 people, mm-hmm. I think, made into a rosary. Mm-hmm. That basically meant he had to kill 100 people. But somehow or other, he decides to try this. So he's in the area that he grows up, and people keep disappearing off paths, and then they're found with one hand missing. And then there becomes eventually this story about some bandit who is collecting fingers, right? The Buddha hears about this guy, and Angulimala has like one more finger to go before he's got his 100, and he's like, really? And he's in this one particular place, and the Buddha is walking along this forest path, and Angulimala sees him coming and says, the last one, thank God, this is the last one. Good. Now my teacher will be satisfied. Oh my God, this has been horrible. Oh yeah, I got my rosary. Oh good, oh good. And he looks, okay, if I run down to that corner where this path turns that way and then that way, I'll be able to get him as he comes closer to the path to get around that rock. And I can just hit him from behind and I won't have to look at him and I can just get his finger. Oh, that's perfect, you know. And he goes running ahead and he times it just right and then he's waiting by the path. Okay, he should be coming now. And he waits. He should have been here now. And he waits. Finally, he decides to look to see whether the guy is like stopped somewhere and is sitting down. He goes out around the rock and he looks around. There's nobody there. He goes right on the path. Goes around. He walks down the path a little bit. Not very far. There's nobody there. He goes back to where the rock is. He scratches his head. Something causes him to turn around. He looks behind him, about 10 feet behind him. There's the Buddha walking along. How did he get past me? Okay, quick, I know where to get him next. Runs in. Same thing happens 3 times. 3 times. Somehow the Buddha isn't coming, and then he's already past him, and he hasn't seen him, and he's right on the path. Finally, the 3rd time, he's like so obsessed with getting this rosary. He stands in the middle of the path. He says, stop, stop! And the Buddha turns around like that and says, I have stopped. Why don't you? And suddenly, he remembered himself. And suddenly he became aware of how foolishly he had taken 99 lives for something he didn't want to do. And he fell and started weeping, and the Buddha picked him up and held him, ordained him, taught him how to meditate. He attained a full awakening with one little glitch. It was on Alms Round once, near the village where most of the people had been killed. And suddenly everybody recognized him, and they beat the shit out of him. They crawled back to the Buddha. He said, "I am so fortunate to have received the back, the pain that I caused. And thank you." And then he died. Story of Angulimala. Isn't that interesting? But our aspiration is, will drive us. But we need to pick an aspiration that is actually valid, not killing people for a finger to get our way. Do you understand? Not killing people, not getting rid of everything else to get our way. Examining what really is our way. What really is our way? And our way has to be kindness. Because nothing else has the payback that kindness does. Does it? Nothing else has the payback that kindness has. Nothing else just makes you relax and smile at someone else's beauty. Does it? Mm-hmm. It's profound kindness, isn't it? And you do it all the time with your music, so many things. But you don't give it to yourself. So maybe that's what you need to do. Practice giving the kindness to yourself. Kindness you do in the world.
Yeah.
We can't be perfect. As long as you're a form, there's something you've left out.
As long as I'm a human, I can't be an elephant. Oh. On the other foot, if I was an elephant, I couldn't sit here with you guys. So that's loving kindness, the thread. It's woven up in many little moments of aspiration. Many little moments of aspiration. That threads one mind state to the next, to the next, to the next. That creates the power of your life. So is the rosary. What about compassion? What's compassion? What do you remember about compassion?
Is that feeling similar to like if an adult sees a child hurt themselves and the child cries because they skin their knee or something? It's that feeling of like you know that person is suffering and you can, but you're not caught up in it, but you can be helpful. Mm-hmm. So I like that description there.
Yeah, that's beautiful. The only little part that's left out of that description, I totally agree with that description. It's one little part, you have to know yourself that falling is suffering so that you can appreciate what the child feels. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Once you have been in the mud and then gotten up again, then you know what it is like to suffer and also what it is like to move beyond suffering. So yeah, it's not personal, it's caring. But it's a personal sense of suffering that makes us compassionate. When people
are suffering, but they try not to suffer. They isolate themselves and they try to make walls between themselves and everything because it maybe is going to cut down their suffering. They can't be compassionate. They just see the whole world as enemies. It's so noisy here, I gotta get a soundproof room. Well, I got a soundproof room, but now I can't open the windows, so I gotta get some air conditioning. Oh, I got the air conditioning, but it's too loud now. I don't know what. It goes and goes and goes, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. But when you turn around and say, oh, this is really suffering, I'm really suffering from this noise. And then someone else realizes, hey, oh, they're suffering from no noise. Oh, there's being in a hospital really helps suffer. You become compassionate. Mm-hmm. Being in a therapy group really helps you become compassionate. Mm-hmm. Being honest about your condition in life and having other people be honest about their condition in life really helps you become compassionate. Mm-hmm. Admitting to the friends what you suffer from. And then realizing that they know that and they also suffer from something helps you become compassionate. There has to first be an accepting of the suffering before one can be compassionate with it, is what I'm really saying. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
If we try to keep our suffering, it's not compassionate. It's just defensive. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So once you know what it's like to be in the mud and you know how to grow out of it and become the lotus, this hand is a rosary, this hand is a lotus.
Mm-hmm.
Loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity, the jewel.
Mm-hmm.
The outer truth and the inner truth.
Mm-hmm.
So what's sympathetic joy?
Happiness from other people's happiness?
That's the main description of it. But how do you have happiness from other people's happiness?
I don't know, just do it.
Sometimes that doesn't happen for people though, does it? I mean, when I was young once upon a time, 60-odd years ago, we had this thing called the Second World War. It started when I was born, and then it ended when I was six. And then after that, all the women had to leave work, because the men were coming back, and they were suffering from a terrible time, fighting a war in very difficult circumstances.
Mm.
And they had trouble working, and money was very short for everybody. And then slowly, there was a little success here, a little success there, and things settled down, and a few more women felt comfortable getting jobs again, and some didn't. They had the wartime houses. And then a lady up the street, two houses away, she and her husband bought a washing machine. They invited everybody in the neighborhood. Bring your laundry. I hadn't felt sympathetic joy like that for a long time. But that was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
We were so happy for them. It was just a joy that there was a new washing machine. And it was just amazing. It was just astounding in the whole community. You know those kinds of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all know that. We all know those kinds of things.
The
thing that was strong about that and that remains strong about that for me is that there wasn't for a moment a sense of being left out, that it wasn't like separate from everyone in the community. It was everyone's success. And that's the main thing about sympathetic joy, is that it doesn't belong to anyone. It's an experience of being, not of attaining. The best way, when you really develop sympathetic joy from a Buddhist perspective, is, as I was saying yesterday, the day before, like right now, you're sitting here, you're breathing, aren't you? All of you are breathing? Okay, good, that's great. And you can feel your breath in your body, right? And just feel it. Don't change your posture, don't go holy on me or anything. Just feel your breath. And feel your posture, feel where your arms are, feel the pressure of your legs or your back. And don't shut your eyes or anything like that. And be aware of the sense of your shoulders. Are they tight? Are they loose? Just feel. Watch your breath come and go, breathing in your body. Be aware of the wall behind you, the ceiling above you. Just keep watching your breath. The floor beneath you, and the other three walls. Just simple, just open yourself to feeling the moment. You notice the kind of an opening happening. Mm-hmm. Quality of spaciousness, maybe. It's like letting go of boundaries. We're just sitting in the room, breathing. There's no you, no I. Sympathetic joy, when it's really of the Buddhist caliber that they're talking about here, is just one step beyond my neighbor with their washing machine. It's where there is no separation. There is only the state of being. Loving kindness and compassion are outside the hands of generosity because they're the relative truth. Sympathetic joy and equanimity are absolute truth. The clear understanding that all beings are already angels, energies of great blissfulness, perfectly wonderful, manifesting here and there as really excellent assholes, but man, they're beautiful. Does that make sense to you? Mm-hmm. And the kind of a joy in just seeing the awakened potential or the awakened truth of every being. All beings are the Buddha, they say. But there is that quality of spaciousness, not thought. Thought can be there, but that's not where the focus is. Sight can be there, but that's not where the focus is. It's not noticed, but it's not the focus. The focus is in the spaciousness and the clarity of spaciousness. Does that explain it? Questions, answers, comments, complaints? It's a natural state of being rather than knowing. And it's the background against which all the knowing plays. And it's always there. But we tend to watch the movie characters, not the screen. So you can get sidetracked by the stories. But that doesn't change that beautiful clarity of sympathetic joy.
Is it like noticing or accepting as opposed to interpreting or thinking
yeah.
it's supposed to be or whatever?
Yeah, not interpreting at all. But opening. Sometimes you play music and sometimes you're not even trying to play.
Yeah.
It's just there. There's just this feeling of being at one.
Yeah.
Like that. Only without even any music or anything. Just, you know. Riding on a bus, or then you actually see all beings are a Buddha, and there's that great joy, but you know. A Buddha pretending to be a thief. Oh, they're doing it really well.
Yeah.
I think I'll just drop my wallet. Oops, I dropped my wallet.
So change your view.
Yeah.
With loving kindness, you know, you often. I've heard stories of monks who generate so much love and kindness that all their fear and anger dissolves and they get out of these very, you know, scary situations. You hear those stories. But with sympathetic joy, what is it, the feeling of being like not connected to other people that is sort of, like if you're feeling the sympathetic joy, as you, like, and you've you know, really perfected it or practiced it, and felt that. Are there emotions that, or
total connection, total. Yeah. All the emotions can come and go, but that doesn't change the ground on which they're playing. It's like a total love affair. I'm really not describing it that well. I'm
it just
sorry.
Feels really big.
It is. It's
so
huge.
It's
being. It's a being state, not a knowing state. We're used to categorizing things, knowing. When I know, there's an I who knows it.
Right.
Being is like sitting here breathing, feeling your breath. Don't worry about what your mind's doing or not doing, but really focus on feeling your breath. Don't find it right or wrong or good or bad. Just think, oh geez, my breath, my lungs know how to breathe. How did they learn that? How did they learn that? Interest suddenly, see? And now I'm pumping oxygen all through my body. Oh, and there's my body, there's my back. Oh, I feel more pressure on the right buttock slightly than the left. Oh, and there's my ankles and my ears. They're up there, ankles are down there. And I'm in space of this room, breathing. And
Let everything soften and just let yourself be aware of the space around you while you're breathing. Aware of the space in front and behind, above you. Let your focus just shift slightly to something softer so that you're letting the idea of space come into your eyes. There's a wall of all behind you, a wall on each side. There's a softness of just being present. Nothing to know, nowhere to go. Just resting in the moment, breathing, easeful. Thoughts come, ho hum, thoughts go, hum, breathing. In spaciousness. Does that feel a little different this time? Mm. Hmm? A little different?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like being easy with it, just easy, and letting go of all of the usual intellectualization we do. That's not easy for us, is it?
Mm.
See, when we meditate, we're going to accomplish something, aren't we? No. Don't accomplish anything. Above all, don't be right. Just relax, and then you start more and more. You do that, like doing that a couple of times a day is very useful. So more and more you do that, the more you actually learn what the state of being is and what its power is. And then from that state of being, there is this sense of kind of energy and joy that comes. You can see that in everybody around you. They're beautiful. They're so beautiful.
It's just what it, but another word would be acceptance. Like acceptance of just where you are. And
but it becomes joy, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good starting point.
I'm just listening to you and saying, okay, if I accepted the way the chair was pressing against my leg, because in reality the rest of me is comfortable.
And why
if
not?
If I moved, it would change something else. So if I can accept that,
yeah,
then I start moving into the other things.
Yeah.
Because this is the thing that's bothering me right now.
Yeah.
So if I can accept that,
yeah,
then I can notice the rest of my body.
Yeah. Except, if you mean by accept, just note the feeling without getting caught in disliking it or thinking you should change or you don't like the chair or anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Accepting someone.
You just acknowledge it. I would use acknowledge. Yeah. But accepting is good.
Yeah.
Accepting has probably got a better flavor to it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So if someone's saying something that's I perceive offensive to me, it's just them saying it.
Yeah.
It's not something that it's nothing if I don't take it or I don't own it.
That's exactly true.
If someone's saying something against somebody else and I don't like that, it's nothing if I don't make something out of it. It's in my own head that I'm hearing it.
That's
and then
exactly
I'm saying,
true.
Well, why are you saying that?
Yeah.
Now I get mad at that person for saying something about that person.
Yeah.
And
you can say them, I don't like hearing stories about other people.
Yeah.
Very kindly.
Yeah.
With a big smile on your face. Hey, you know what? You know that Tibetan saying, if somebody throws a stone at you, or a spear, they say, If somebody throws a spear at you, that's their problem. If you pick it up and stab yourself with it, that's your problem.
Yeah.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you throw spears at yourself, that's definitely your problem. If you stab yourself with them, that's your problem, too.
If it didn't get to you, you got to bend out, pick it up, and pull it yourself with it, didn't
you? Well, according to the saying, no spear that's thrown at you can get to you. You have to pick it up.
Yeah.
That's what they're talking about.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
And that's like accepting, isn't it? What you're saying about accepting. Accepting is much more passive, isn't it? It's not having to, I've got to move, or it's just, oh yeah, there's a feeling of discomfort there. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, where's comfort? Oh yeah. What's the walls like? And what's the space around me like? Sort of broadens the view. That's the basis of sympathetic joy. It's that state of being where you can appreciate the potential nature of awakening of everything around you. It's a little difficult to grasp, isn't it?
And when you're in that state, I'm surmising that you would act with more clarity in your everyday life. Like, would just be much more clear what you have to say, do, your interactions.
Nothing particularly has to change. You don't have to not hear or not see or, you know, be wrapped in styrofoam or anything like that. That's not necessary.
No.
Holy does not mean being wrapped in styrofoam. It means that you're able to see beyond self-grasping. Things aren't personal. There's thousands of Zen stories on that point.
Sure. Tell us a story.
Oh, tell you one.
Sure.
Oh, okay. Let's see which one. Well, the one I can remember just right now is about the young monk who had this experience of us. Samadhi and meditation on a retreat, and then he was sent to go and help live in this small community at a small Zen center there, and he was sort of the main monk at this very small place, and one of the local families, the daughter, fell in love with a farmer's son who lived just down the road, but neither one of them would have been liking their those children to get married, so they had an affair together and she got pregnant. And when she was found out she was pregnant, her father was quite angry and asked her, threatened her to tell, until so she told him who was the father so he could, you know, get the proper vengeance. And she told him it was the monk, because she was in love with the guy who was a monk. She told him it was a monk, so they went and arrested the monk and threw him in jail, and he was terrible, and he wasn't going to get food in jail, and it was terrible. They arrested him, and he said, oh, boy, and why am I being arrested? Oh, because you raped my daughter, and you raped this man's daughter, and now she's pregnant. And he said the famous Japanese phrase, aso desu ka, which means, oh, is that so? Aso desu ka. And so then he's in jail, and then sometime later, the daughter is very, very ill, and she's almost dying. And she feels really badly about what's happened, and she doesn't want the bad luck of that to be passed on to her child. And she calls the local police, and she says to them, it wasn't the monk. Calls her father. It wasn't the monk. Oh, her father runs to the judge and gets a pardon. And it wasn't the monk. And so then they go to the monk's cell. He's having quite a good time there because he doesn't have to deal with any parishioners. And it's a soul, venerable soul. Oh, sorry, so sorry. Oh, please forgive us. It wasn't you. And he says, oh, so does God. Oh, is that what's going on? And then the cartoon that I told you about the other day, that's one of my favorites. I had this cartoon that I really loved, and I used it once for a class when I was teaching in Toronto all the time. And this one friend that I taught in her apartment, she had a closet that was quite large. I had lots of file cabinets and vacuum cleaners and things in, and a light and switch inside of it, so you could go in and close the door and turn around and all that, and there was lots of space. So I put the cartoon on the inside of the door and then turned the light on, and the whole class consisted of everybody getting up one at a time, walking into that closet, closing the door, turning around three times, turning on the light, reading what they read, then turning off the light and coming out, and that was class. And the cartoon is two guys sitting on top of a mountain, and one says to the other, "What do you mean? What's next? This is it." That was my whole class. See, I've improved slightly. At least try to entertain you. They're both basically the same thing. Oh, so does God. This is it. There's no before or no after, no better, no worse. This is it. And that's what the state of being, it reinforces in you. This is it. And when you see that, they say in Buddha's Dharma, they say that if you really meditate on impermanence, the truth of impermanence, what happens is enormous joy fills your life. Hmm. Why? Because you have this moment. This is the moment. I have this moment. There's no past or future. There's nothing to change. It's just this. This is it. It is here, this moment, breathing. It increases the power of the state of being, which is very joyful. You see babies. Have you seen babies?
Mm-hmm.
Are they happy?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they're being. They haven't got the...
Mm-hmm.
The best example of a state of being is newborn babies. First little while, their brain is still loading up. They haven't got thought down to perfection yet. Everything they see is the first time. You've seen me tell this story 1,000 times, so I'll do it once more. It's one of my favorite things, but when babies like somewhere between 2 and 3 months old, unless they're in the womb a little longer than usual, and they're a few weeks old, maybe close to 2 months, but not quite, and they'd be lying there going, and you see this, like, total, the intellect is connecting with an outer object.
Mm-hmm.
And something, some image is being laid in.
Mm-hmm.
And then they build and they build, and then pretty soon the images run you. Rather than you being able to be in a state of being and discover with joy. When you're 3 months old, There's no resident expert. You can't do anything wrong. Or right. It's just the moment. It's still there. But we cover it with these layers. Don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. We don't get equanimity?
Next month. One a month. Takes me a month to do one.
Okay.
And you know, usually I have to do the other three again before I do the four. Is that helpful when people going over loving kindness?
It is. Yeah.
You see, they actually are like steps, aren't they? And you can't do loving kindness and you do it until you do it for yourself. Otherwise, it's a duty. But when you actually appreciate whoever made you, how well they've done it, and like just the way your quirky sense of humor is, or you have a certain charisma but you don't like crowds, whatever it is that is your, you know, je ne sais quoi, and you appreciate walking around in your body and you think how wonderful it is. Hey Bob, you're doing that a lot, aren't you? Being much more appreciative of who you are. Then when I met you, it was a long time ago though. But aren't you? I mean, it's huge, the difference in yourself, isn't it?
Yeah. There's a noticeable difference.
Yeah. And really beautiful. And there's a kind of a relaxing with that, isn't there? So it's easier when you're not criticizing yourself, it's easier to see the beauty in others. When you're busy criticizing yourself, it's very hard even to see that somebody else just passed you on the street. Because you're going, nye, 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 nye. Is that true?
Yeah.
So if it starts with yourself, then it's real easy. Because you got all that free time. Sure. That makes sense, doesn't it? You get rid of all the hired hands and just have a good time. doing your own loving kindness chores with all the neighbors.
But it's true, though, because you just always want to be doing something. And so why not? You know, just walk through
the
world.
Go around having fun.
Walk through the world.
Being
you know.
Kind to everybody.
Yeah.
I think I'll go down the street and be kind. I better not tell anybody, though. You have to start with yourself, though. So, thank you so much again for your kindness and laughing at my bad jokes, etc. Practicing loving kindness. You notice this beautiful gold light in your heart, and it just goes through your whole body. Wiggles your toes a little bit. Arms, legs, up your head. Pours out your pores, fills this room. Beautiful gold light. The energy just fills the whole neighborhood. All those cats just got a little bit of heat down in the backyard there. Goes as far as you want to think it goes. Just moves through wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, and mind. It's just temporarily assuaged. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together,
We share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering.
So thank you for your great compassion. Thank you. Thank you.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.